I'm one of the people that, if given the option, marks down American.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I would say that's the ancestry I identify with.
See, I always pick Eskimo because that's the rarest one.
Go ahead, contradict me. And then when you come in for the interview, you're like, oh, everyone lies a little bit on their resume.
Yeah. Could you turn up the AC? It's fucking hot in here. Welcome to episode number 129 of Stand Under the Don't Tree and Riddle Me This, a podcast about video games, a completely free podcast about video games, unless you count time as a cost, and we don't. My name is Cole Ross, and I am your host, and I am joined over Skype today by...
Dennis Furia.
And Ben Merkel.
David Moneysmith.
Welcome back, Dennis. It's been a minute.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a minute. To get in it, to get with it, to spin it, but I'm back.
Well, it's fantastic to have you back. What do we have in store for today? We have some quick hits. Going to be talking about some disturbing developments in the PSN debacle, the aftermath to that. We're also going to be talking about some media stuff with Xbox TV and Netflix and all of those kind of things. And then we're going to round out the program with a discussion about what we have been playing. If you want a little sneak peek of mine, I have decided to substantiate my crap talking against Dead Island by playing a little bit of that. And I'm sure you guys have some interesting stuff to say as well. So we're going to take a quick little music break and come back on the other side with the quick hits. Now, the quick hits are where we talk about video game news, and we do it in a hasty manner, but we still, you know, try and, you know, give you the information that you need, plus the commentary that you desire, and the opportunity to talk that we crave. Coin sound.
So the first quick hit is almost like a mystery hit. Xbox TV is going to be a thing this holiday season. What is Xbox TV, you might ask? It's something that Microsoft recently announced. And the company, Microsoft, is currently in talks with dozens or hundreds of content suppliers for the service, which will mix live TV and on-demand content. And it's rumored that Microsoft is working with Comcast and Verizon to get the shows onto the service. Yet no pricing has been announced.
Dozens or hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to put 5 minutes on the clock and we're going to see where this goes. I added this to the program notes because this is something that's irritating me. I've yet to see TV done right.
Yeah.
In a way that isn't just the worst experience possible. I had a bit of an experience last Thursday when It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia had its season premiere. Went to watch it on my Time Warner cable box, and it would not air in high definition. It just kept on locking up and freezing and said, this is not available. Yesterday, I was sitting down and I wanted to watch some TV. I saw that Pee-wee's Big Adventure was on, one of my favorite movies of all time. That channel was not available.
Nice.
And then I went and looked around and saw, oh, Young Frankenstein is on. Another fantastic movie I counted as one of my favorites. And that was a pay channel. And I've been waiting and hoping in my heart of hearts that somebody would make TV that isn't just the most awful thing in the entire world. And I don't know if Microsoft can do it.
Yeah, first off, I'm surprised you found Young Frankenstein on a pay channel. Like, must have been between, like, Naughty Vixens and Fight Night 500, you know?
Well, that's the thing, because, like, they have, like, HBO on demand and high definition and, you know, things like that. I can understand, you know, some channels are subscription, you know, channels, but these are, you know, it seems like every network has a for-pay movie channel now, and they don't hide those out. I wish there was an option where you could say, don't put pay channels in this, but they want to, you know, hang that out there so you can see a fantastic Mel Brooks film. And like, oh man, do I want to pay for this? Okay, well, okay, $15 a month. That's not bad. And then boom, there you go. Just the worst.
I can definitely feel for you because actually right before getting on for this podcast, I was filling out a service request on my cable, which isn't working. But I mean, really most of the time I just do Hulu or Netflix.
I think that I'm just tired of watching television programs on my computer screen. That's okay for a minute, but it's just kind of like my TV is always a monitor, simply just a monitor for my for my gaming systems, and that's it. Mm-hmm. It just every time I try and watch TV on there. My problem is, you know, I can't imagine this coming at a cost that isn't completely absurd.
How do you define absurd?
Absurd. I'm talking like okay. So in order to do Netflix on Xbox 360, you have to be a gold member, which is, you know, $60 per year, and then you have to have you know, a Netflix membership, which for a while there was up to about $15 per thing. Now it's down to $8. Hulu Plus, you have to, you know, subscribe to them. I believe it's like what, $15 per month, which in the scheme of things compared to like cable, dear God, if you do cable, that's what, $50-$60 a month.
Yeah,
to have like a modicum of, you know, any kind of good number of channels. That's just I don't know. I don't think that the content providers, in this case Verizon, Comcast, etc., are going to let this be something where it's like, oh, that's packed in with your Xbox Live Gold. Case in point, DirecTV added the NFL season ticket to PlayStation 3, and you have to pay like $600 for the entire season to get that.
And apparently it didn't really work on the first on opening weekend.
That's just crazy.
In order for it to be worth it, it would have to be better than Netflix, which probably means it would have to be less than $15, because I can't really see them providing a better service.
It's almost, I mean, Netflix is almost like the World of Warcraft of that industry, in that it was kind of their, not necessarily first, but early enough on, it set so many of the standards and so many people are subscribed to it that they've really got the muscle to, one, do it well enough to make it work, and then two, to kind of edge out anyone who tries to get in on their turf.
They've established a synecdoche, which is, you know, it's, you know, a service that either streams movies or, you know, mails things to you. That's our time.
Whoa, you got a new chime?
That's impressive.
I know, right? No, just anything that mails DVDs to you is now Netflix. You know,
yep.
As opposed to, oh, it's not Blockbuster's video service or whatever. But we'll see that Netflix may not be the king of this forever, at least as we understand it. So, oh, sorry. Down. Down, boy. Down.
Unleash the dogs.
Can we start yelling dive every time the timer goes off?
I just love that if you keep on talking after the timer goes off, they set the dogs on you. That's pretty...
This week, Netflix announced that it will be splitting its company into two, with the DVD shipping part of their business becoming the horribly named Quickster. Let's just let that one sit there for a while. Gonna let that hang.
Quickster.
Okay. I like this spelling.
Let me go vomit.
Can I spell? You're a marketing and branding guy too, so this must just be like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to hurry up. Dennis is getting physically ill by this. It's spelled Q-W-I-K-S-T-E-R. Quickster. Well, this move will have tremendous repercussions on the home video industry. It's been revealed that Quickster will be edging its way into video game rentals as well. This feature is being billed as an upgrade option, and no pricing information has been released. This will be similar to when Netflix, that was, offered Blu-rays for a couple extra bucks a month. So this is them kind of firing a shot across Gamefly's bow. I am going to put 5 minutes on the clock, and we're going to see where this takes us. Most of us have been Gamefly subscribers, you know, what do we think of this? Dennis, you being the one who was most loyal to the service.
Honestly, I don't think it's a shot across Gamefly's bow at all. I think what happened was Netflix wanted to find a way to cut off the one arm of its business that wasn't profitable and wanted to do it, you kind of let it die without hurting its overall financials. So you spin it off and let it go die in a corner on its own while the rest of your business continues looking great. So I think Gamefly is probably looking at this saying, meh, you know, I feel bad for the people who are going to have to, you know, redo their subscriptions after 3 months when this thing dies.
It is a horribly handled thing. I woke up on Monday morning and I had an email from the CEO of Netflix basically explaining, yeah, we're going to break this in two. And it's like, how bad is it that the CEO is like talking to the average customer saying, this is the new direction for our companies.
Yeah.
But you're right. You know, it is their way of trying to quarantine the bad part. And I agree. So, DVDs are going the way of wax cylinders. But let's assume that this is kind of billed as a killer feature. You know, if it's priced cheaper than Gamefly, I could imagine that Netflix with their current kind of infrastructure and their deals with, you know, the United States Postal System, you know, this might expedite shipping. This might make it a little bit better for the customer. I mean, any thoughts on that?
The postal service might not be a good bet right now.
Well, that's out of scope, but continue.
I don't know. I mean, when Dennis and I were, well, when I was mooching off of Dennis's Netflix, or Gamefly, I'm still mooching off of his Netflix. That's another issue.
I will report you to. That is unconscionable.
Well, it's okay because I'm mooching off my parents' Netflix, so it all kind of...
You're allowed... I checked. You're allowed at least 6 activations.
But only 2 concurrent streams.
No, but the thing I noticed is that ultimately, for the price you pay, unless you pretty much return, you know, play each game in like a week and return it, you're generally better off just buying the game. I feel like Netflix is in a lot, or Gamefly is in a lot of ways just a way to play a lot of games without feeling like you're spending a lot of money buying games.
I mean, thinking of a hypothetical, I imagine a lot of people feel more comfortable spending $22 per month to, you know, to support their game habit rather than what, you know, like I do. I budget myself for one game every month, and that's $60 per month, you know. Give or take. Some months I don't, and then I make it up the next with 2. Then there's the holiday, which is just a cluster bang. But you know, the economics of that are increasingly interesting as people kind of, you know, renegotiate what they're willing to spend on, you know, frivolous items.
Right? Sure. The other thing I have to say is, I'm pretty sure in kindergarten I learned that a queue is silent unless followed by you. So I'm pretty sure it's Wickster.
But it's...
It's like a hipster on Wikipedia?
Exactly.
Ben, what's up?
About Quickster?
Well, I mean, just do you have any thoughts? You've been silent here.
Well, I mean, I don't even have a Netflix account. I don't want to say anything that would be incriminating to myself about how I watch media. So.
Oh, okay. No, I understand, but that is I guess what all of this goes back to is with the Netflix problem. You know, speaking only about movies, there is a great service where people like myself, technologically savvy people who would know how to illegally acquire these things, potentially. I was willing to pay my penance and give them $10 per month to get access to these things. Oh. Yeah.
They set the springs on us?
And ducks. And then they go and kind of mess things up and make technologically minded people rethink that. It is depressing, but oh well.
So basically, when proteins, their makeup, what little protein amino acid things they have causes them to fold up all in knots, and apparently figuring out how they're folded is really important to science and medicine, but apparently computers are very bad at figuring out how to unfold these things, you know, sort of like the computer equivalent, I guess, of setting up an IKEA furniture. So what some scientists from the University of Washington did is set up a game called Fold It, where that gamers could attempt to basically fold proteins in order to find the best orientation that produced the least energy, which is what the actual orientation is. And this thing that scientists for the trying to cure AIDS have been trying to find this protein for apparently years, and gamers found it in 3 weeks.
Woot!
So, I mean, on the first thing, it's fairly awesome. You know, the fact that gamers are curing AIDS, you know, stuff like that's cool. It's also interesting because it kind of shows, you know, the human brain's known for being really good at, pattern recognition, things like that, which is something computers still aren't good at. So, apparently the robots will not overtake us yet.
And if they do, we'll just give them AIDS.
Robo-AIDS.
I think that's the take-home message.
Oh, let's put 4 minutes on the clock and just talk about how awesome this is. I mean, the triumph of the human mind.
Or extra time spent with a controller in hand.
No, but what David said, you know, that rings true. This is, you know, a lot of games are about spatial reasoning, right? Spatial reasoning and pattern recognition. And, mm-hmm. and this basically took a very complicated problem, broke it down into a bunch of its simplest little component widget parts, distributed those things to individual people and said, figure this out. And the results were sent back and this was put together. This is not only a triumph of humanity, but also a triumph of technology, the ability to distribute this computing and to kind of find a novel solution to a seemingly intractable problem, right?
Yeah, I just have this image of in my head of like fold revolution and like some wacky interface with proteins like streaming at you and
Japanese music playing in the background.
But this,
well, I mean, of course, how are you going to cure AIDS without Japanese music?
but this is like folding at home without raising your electricity bill.
Yeah, I left folding at home on all the time when I first got my PS3 before I realized what a crappy idea that was.
Why is this room so goddamn hot? It's kind of like people mining for bitcoins.
I've never even heard of that.
Oh, look this up. It's a very funny idea. Basically, it's this idea of a completely computerized currency that it's just completely asinine. People are like building like rigs like with 20 GPUs specifically to mine, quote unquote, for these bitcoins. And it's hilarious because people are being busted because the police look for spikes in power usage looking for grow houses. And so the cops are breaking down people's doors saying like, okay, where are you growing the weed? And turns out it's just some, you know, libertarian nerd mining for bitcoins. It's great.
Which by what we mean from that is he probably then gets busted for weed. Let's be honest, there's probably a lot of overlap.
But the fact remains. I mean, David, did it say like what platform this was for?
See, I was actually trying to find that. It lists it as being on Wikipedia as being Linux, Windows, and Mac. However, the actual article I read was on PlayStationLifestyle.net, which would tend to suggest that someone playing a PlayStation managed to find it.
I think it's relevant to general gamer interest, though.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. So I guess, you know, basically on the computer.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one PlayStation 3 that they never updated that can still run Linux.
Sick burns, my friend.
You know, there's been several things that have tried this, though. You know, there's the ReCAPTCHA or whatever. It's basically the same idea. Or, you know, CAPTCHA in general.
Or Google 411 was how they set up the reference database for their voice recognition that never works on my Google Voice account. that's amazing. So this was just one protein in a retrovirus that is very similar to AIDS. So three weeks in what scientists took years to even begin to scratch the surface of.
You know, it'd be interesting to see if they extend it because the idea of, you know, figuring out protein folding is a big deal in a lot of different medical procedures in terms of detecting different viruses, finding ways to cure them all. Theoretically, I mean, this could be a big deal.
Dude, they should install this game in like every waiting room for every doctor and hospital ever.
Totally. Yeah.
I don't know if you're joking or not, but it's a good idea.
It's no, you know, it kind of started out as like, where would it be amusing to have this? And
prison.
And that's time.
Boing. So Sony has issued a mandatory system update that serves only one purpose: to amend the PSN terms of service agreement to forbid class action lawsuits of any form. Instead, all disputes and arbitration must be handled on an individual basis unless Sony agrees otherwise. This decision is related to this spring's month-long outage. Users will have the option to opt out of the agreement by sending Sony a postcard. So basically, this enrages me because it's essentially Sony saying, we expect it to happen again.
Let's put 4 minutes on the clock. Explain that.
I mean, so yeah, you guys screwed up big time. You leaked people's information all over the internet. Well, I mean, technically, you dangled it out there and hackers took it, but it's basically the same thing. And so you kind of have consequences headed towards you. That's the world we live in, you know? If I get caught with my hand in the cookie jar, mom's going to give me a spanking. That's probably a little Freudian, but no, like, you know, we live in a world that's so centered around conflict avoidance that I was really impressed when Sony stood up at E3 and was like, we screwed up. We're sorry. We're going to try to make it better. That was really respectable. And now they've gone and completely reversed it in a way that says, yeah, we did something really bad. We screwed up. And so instead of learning from our mistakes, we're just going to make sure the next time that we do the exact same thing, we'll weasel out of it.
Yeah, this is them essentially saying, we don't like to be sued. We really like our money.
and it's funny because they made their big kabuki show of being contrite. And then when everybody just forgotten about it, because, I mean, geez, guys, this was like, what, 4 months ago?
Yeah.
Stop living in the past, man. Yeah, that's eons ago in terms of the news cycle, right? So then they slip this out.
Sure.
And the really weaselly part of this is you can actually opt out of this if you send them a postcard with a bunch of information, which is kind of them saying like, okay, we recognize that the power of a class action lawsuit is in getting as many people to sign it as possible. So if we disqualify as many people as possible, because the only people who are going to send in those postcards are going to be, you know, the people who really care about this and follow it, which, you know, at that level of a quote unquote class action, if they could even get approved for it, it would be no better than them trying to file individually anyway.
Yeah.
Right. It just, it completely neuters the idea of it. And this is not an unusual agreement to be put into a terms of service, but it's unusual in as far as like, this is like the first time it's been done in a real consumer facing kind of way. Usually it's focused on like employment law.
Yeah.
From what I understand, like the big thing with Walmart, the big Supreme Court case with Walmart was basically about like whether or not this is a constitutional thing to have in employment law. But turns out that it is. So Sony is kind of taking this and turning it a little bit.
The fact that they're doing this after people have already had the PS3 potentially for years, if it hasn't caught on fire. I don't know, that seems like almost the worst part, just because, I don't know, I mean, that seems almost like a bait and switch type of thing.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, these people stuck with you through this big data leak, right? So those who are still playing a PlayStation 3 have already given, you know, Sony a serious amount of rope, and they just kind of went and took that rope to tie our hands even further.
It's a serious question about, you know, consumer rights and whether or not you actually own this box and whether or not you actually own your information, et cetera, et cetera.
I'd be interested to see some of the postcards they get.
We should capitalize on this. Let's take pictures of us flipping off the camera, just like a close up shot of a hand, and then we'll market that if we, you know, with the template set up. You know, this is your name, this is your PSN number, this is your account number, et cetera, et cetera. And then we can put those up on sale on Craigslist, and then we'll get.
I like it.
Yeah, let's do that. Come on,
oh, yeah.
Got a camera right here.
Let's start a movement where you know write the postcard, make it easily legible, and then just wear it in your underwear for a day. before you say
oh, come on, it's not that person's fault. It's not the male the male jockey's fault. That's just cruel, Dennis.
Well, we know the Postal Service is on its way out anyway, so
we're sitting here having a good time and you have to go and make it gross. Shame on you. So the question of the night would be, what are you playing, Dennis?
Yeah, I guess I've kind of had a long hiatus, so I feel like I should have a long list, with the operative word being should. I've been playing, you know, Wedding and Honeymoon and all that stuff. So the names of the games have not changed that much. I've been playing a little more Hot Shots Golf. Okay. Which I'm getting up into the more difficult tournament brackets now, and that's I've started to kind of reach my skill level, and so it's getting increasingly harder. And again, I'm just continually amazed at for how my personality is. You know, usually if I see that I'm not going to finish first place in a race, I'll restart it before I finish it. Or if I, you know, if I see that I'm, you know, not on track for the high score that I wanted, I'll start over rather than invest the time and not hit my goal. But in Hot Shots, I've been more than content to play through a round where I'm really not doing that good. So I don't know if it's something about the way the game is designed or just something about golf in general that lends itself to kind of just kind of messing around and playing through even when you're not doing so bad or not doing so hot.
I think it's something about golf in general that, and maybe that game is just incredibly friendly.
Yeah, that is true.
That's also that's also something.
Your caddy makes such a cute sad face when you miss that.
when you miss the ball,
I still love some of the dialogue in that.
Yeah.
Oh, me go back to China.
Yeah. But then the other thing I've realized is part of what I've tried to do. Is kind of I'll leave the game on in the background almost, and I'll kind of play a hole and then go do some chores and then play a hole and then go, you know, help make dinner and that sort of thing. And I suck when I do that. The game, I you know, never would have thought about this unless I tried what I did. The game really lends itself to getting into a groove, which I guess when I say the game, I mean Hot Shots and golf in general, yeah. Where, you know, playing a bunch in a row, you start to kind of hit your stride and stuff starts clicking and you kind of get hot. Whereas when I'm trying to just kind of play one hole at a time, I just kind of stayed cold and was all over the place, which is a real shame because it's such an easy game to just set down and walk away from and come back to. Yeah. That I wish I could keep my game up while I was playing it. But no, that's what I've been playing for the most part. A little more time invested into DMC, but Devil May Cry 3, for those who weren't there when I talked about it last. Still a ton of fun, has aged extremely well, but not that much new to report.
Well, did you see that there is a possibility the ESRB rated HD remakes of DMC 1 through 3?
I didn't. I tried to play DMC 1, and it wouldn't work on my system. So I'm very excited to hear that.
It's not a done deal. It's not like confirmed.
I'll be buying it when it comes out. Yeah. So the one other thing I'll say is I was gifted a PS3 or loaned, I guess you should say. my brother doesn't have a TV in his apartment right now, so I've got his PS3 at least through Christmas. And I got so excited, then I went to hook it up, and my TV is too low def. I don't have just a plain old yellow video connector. I've only got the RGB inputs. So I either need to go buy a nicer TV, or I need to go out and I don't know if I can bring myself to do this, buy a low def connector for my PS3.
Are you going to get a Radio Shack for that?
I know.
It's no longer Radio Shack. It's now simply The Shack.
Is it really?
Yeah, they changed their name to The Shack.
Pro tip, Dennis, the RF adapters for both the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 work on the PlayStation 3. It's the same jack.
No way.
Yeah. So you could, if you're already playing your PS2 on it, you can plug from your, you can plug that into your PlayStation 3.
I could have had a mountain of games to talk to you guys about. I'm ashamed. I didn't even think to try that.
No, it's funny because Sony's like the most consumer friendly in that regard, which makes sense because they need to be consumer friendly in some regard, right?
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, I'm surprised they didn't make that the case on the 60 gigabyte PS3 and then make you buy a special adapter for when this came out. But okay, well, I'm going to go play some games. I'm really going to go work on cleaning out the massively overstocked rooms of my house. But that's what I've been playing. Apparently, my repertoire of games for next week will be vastly expanded.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I apologize to the audience. I do have to duck out early. But
well, that's perfectly fine. Thank you so much for joining us for the first part of the show.
Thank you guys for being awesome.
Yeah. Let's continue with a discussion here. Do you guys mind if I go? Because I've got some kind of brief stuff here.
Can I go? Because sure. Mine is really anticlimactic.
Okay. Yeah, go.
See, I feel like then you should go last.
Yeah, I know, but, all right?
Oh, I just haven't been playing much at all. I've been teaching.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Same here.
I've played one round, maybe two, of Modern Warfare 2 and played a little bit of Fallout 3. But that's about it. Like, I have little to nothing to say. I did a little bit on Fallout 3, doing more missions for the Yes Man. I want to see how that ending is, but...
By Fallout 3, do you mean Fallout New Vegas?
Yeah, that's the one. That's what I mean.
I was curious.
So, yeah.
So the Yes Man missions, they don't differ very substantially from the Mr. House missions.
Okay.
From what I understand.
Yeah. I think I'll play that through and slowly go through that, and then after I do that, I'll probably just look up what all the different stories are and then play whatever sounds interesting enough.
Makes sense. What kind of character did you roll?
I used a lot of plasma guns or whatever, but I put my intelligence at a 10 from the get-go, and I think I got the one perk where you get two extra skill points. Like, okay. I got that very early on, and so I was basically just trying to max out all my skills. So, but then in addition to that, I used energy weapons. And
I gotcha. Well, I told the story last week about being the gunslinger. So
I remember. Yeah.
That story does not bear repeating. But it's just interesting to see what people roll as, and if they're happy with it. Because the sad thing about a lot of these games is that you're forced to make these decisions about what kind of character you're going to play before you realize whether or not that kind of character will be fun to play.
You know, I'm thinking of another game that has a similar system to that. Which could segue into what you're going to talk about. Knights of the Old Republic, I felt, was a similar sort of dynamic there. But perhaps we can talk about that for your thing. Yeah.
See, that's why I always play it on PC, because then if that happens, I just open up developer console and change things to what I would have done if I had known.
But yeah, that's all I got. So
okay. Well, I hate to disappoint you, Ben, but I played about a half an hour of Knights of the Old Republic 1.
Okay.
Simply because I bought it on a lark, and I'm still getting used to it. No, I'm not saying I dislike. quit gasping! You're gonna pass out. No. I'll have more to say about it next week.
How far did you get in the story?
I am at the very end of the tutorial level.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm still learning more. It's very strange how it controls. I can tell that it was primarily developed for the console, which is something I didn't anticipate.
Okay.
Just because of the way that you do control. I expected to be able to like pull back into a Baldur's Gate / Neverwinter Nights tactical view. Like looking down at everything as opposed to the view and kind of the decisions always being made from a single character level. So that is something where I need to get used to it and get acclimated to, kind of getting around. It runs very well on my Mac, which obviously it should, since it's an 8-year-old game. But I got it on the App Store. It's the first game I bought on the official Apple App Store, as opposed to, going through Steam, et cetera. And, I've been very pleased with the process. I saw that it was on sale, so I was like, "Yeah, I'll get it, and I'll make Ben happy." But I am rolling right now a female scoundrel, And then I imagine that I will go, you know, Jedi at some point, or we'll have to.
Did I give you any advice when you said you were playing that game? Did I tell you anything about, like, because I thought about telling you, like, oh, you should put your intelligence at this or something like that, but I don't know if I did or not.
No, you didn't say that. I always, when I play these games, I always roll for conversation. So I set my intelligence and my charisma very high.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Like, so my main stats, intelligence, charisma, and dexterity, obviously, for doing ranged weapons.
Okay. Cool.
Is that a good decision, or?
In Knights of the Republic 2, yeah.
Two? Wait a minute.
Yeah, we'll talk about it, you know.
And after I've made all these mistakes?
Put in 8 hours. Put in a good 8 hours, Cole. Okay. Just think of it as a work shift, but it'll be so much more fun.
Should I re-roll right now?
Well, you know, honestly, you're going to want to prefer strength to dexterity.
Oh, because of the sabers?
Yeah.
Even as a scoundrel?
See, yeah. That was true even in the pen and paper game.
Well, isn't there some kind of weapon finesse feat that you can take that'll let you offload your damage to dexterity?
In Knights of the Republic 2, yes.
God damn it!
Not in the first one. Not in the first one.
Son of a bitch.
You're just at the tutorial, dude. You can back it out.
I can
no
re-roll.
Problem.
Okay. I didn't expect to get that angry about it.
It's just that good.
Yeah. So I'll have more to report on that later. I got so distracted this past week since Minecraft 1.8 came out. Which I know about your pale opinion of Minecraft, so I will.
Whatever do you mean?
What's that?
I said, whatever do you mean?
Well, you've never been able to look past the graphics.
No, that's not true.
No? Okay.
I just don't care about it. Okay. Or I don't, it doesn't strike my fancy.
Okay.
It's not my bag.
Baby.
But it's not because of the graphics.
Okay.
I'm not that shallow, Cole.
Well, 1.8 added some really interesting stuff. I mean, they're preparing for the adventure upgrade, where they're going to be adding like quests and NPCs. I was very disappointed that they didn't add quests and NPCs at this point, but you know, we'll see how that kind of fares. But right now, the most important upgrades are the hunger system. And some of the new features you can find out in the world, specifically, and I won't spend too much time on this, but the hunger system. So it used to be that eating food, be it, you know, crops that you harvest or meat that you harvest from living beings, used to be that would restore your health directly. Whereas right now they've added a hunger system. So you have two separate meters and you have to watch this hunger meter. And if you have a full hunger meter, it will slowly restore your health. And if your hunger meter is down, it will drain your health. And it sounds kind of like...
not sound fun.
It is, actually, just because it adds another kind of level of simulation to the game. You know, the whole kind of appeal to me for Minecraft is that it is this kind of robust, not realistic, but simulated world. And food is plentiful, but it's just something that you have to kind of consider. I would imagine it being akin to rolling in hardcore mode in Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
Or akin to, say, Stalker, where you have to in Stalker, don't you have to mind your hydration and your food as well?
Yeah, I guess you do technically have to do food. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, it's another level. It makes farming a more viable option. You know, not like a lull, you know, Farmville kind of thing, but it gives you something to do, you know, during the day, and it gives you a reason to kind of set up and establish. You know, I won't tell any stories about what I'm doing, but I rolled a killer world that had lots of buttes in it, like just gigantic, like plateau mountains, like the Australian outback. So I'm slowly working on exploring the caves that are in that. And speaking of this, they've also added ravines. So, like, as you're walking through, it will generate basically canyons, And these canyons, you know, they will always have, you know, caves and stuff that will lead in, you know, lead into and out of them. And so it's just like this big gash across, you know, large parts of the world that can be rendered in there, which is really neat because with the New World generation, swamps and stuff are bigger, and just kind of the general biomes, they're very large, and just the terrain that is generated is generally much more interesting. Than it has been in the past. So that's pretty cool. I have yet to find any of the strongholds or the villages or the mine shafts, but they are slowly working on adding these kind of randomly placed and generated dungeon type places for you to, you know, raid, loot, and kind of conquer.
Have they tightened up combat at all?
They have. They've taken some pretty important steps for that. You can do a critical hit by jumping with your sword. So
Nice.
If you hit a monster while you're coming down from a jump, it will do critical damage on it. You can also believe it's the right click. You can right click the block, and
Okay.
you can now charge bow hits or your bow and arrow, and you move more slowly when you're charging. So.
Very cool.
So when does this game officially release?
It releases this November.
Okay.
It's fun, and you know, it's kind of the along with like The Sims, it is this quintessential kind of toy game where there's not a, you know, it's very much your curiosity and your own kind of volition that drives you know, setting your own goals. But they're kind of adding in the support to really kind of codify things that you're supposed to quote unquote do in the game. Play a little bit of Myst 3. I'm not going to talk that much about that, although I will say it is the weakest game in the series. I'd say by far, actually. Still enjoyed it. The story is very good, but it was the first game where they added 360 view. Except it's all like stills, and you are kind of like navigate, like rotating around in like this QuickTime HD kind of thing where you're looking around at a still image, and it gets super, super, super dizzying, and it kind of makes you
So
sick.
it's like Google Street Vision.
Yeah, it's like walking around in Google Street View and trying to find your paths that way. It's a strategy that was much more effective in Myst 4, which I started but didn't play enough to talk about here. But Myst 4 just looks amazing, and it was developed, I think, more smartly. So yeah, PP doo-doo. Love the series, but that I think is the weakest entry, even though it is kind of the one with one of the better stories. And then finally, to justify my trash talking, I have played about an hour and a half of Dead Island.
I don't know what the reaction should be to that. I'm at a loss.
See, that's a game I'm excited about if I can find anyone to play co-op.
And you know, that will be my one caveat. Because I don't have Xbox Live, and in fact, because my Xbox is not plugged into the internet, I didn't play co-op in this. You know, that's my one caveat, is I may not have been playing it the way the developer intended. But I think my criticisms and my thoughts apply to it regardless. There are certain things that won't change if you are playing with a bunch of people. Playing with a bunch of people could distract you from that, and kind of that amount of fun that you're having simply by playing with other people could overwhelm the fact that the combat is a little bit shallow. That may be the case, but I guess what I'm saying is the combat's shallow. First person melee combat has been done very well before, citing specifically the Condemned games, both of which are amazing, and both do a very good job of making first-person combat feel kind of visceral and fast-paced and not disorienting. Also, the Chronicles of Riddick, Butcher Bay, and even going back to the original Xbox even further, a game called Breakdown had great first-person melee combat. This game, it's really about putting your cursor over the enemy and hitting the right trigger, and there's literally no depth to it. Like, I think that you can hold down the button if you have like a specific stat or perk, and unless you do like a charge attack. But it's really just whack 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 whack. There's no block. There's a kick, but that is kind of minimal in a kind of dead Left 4 Dead kind of fashion. Or did Left 4 Dead have like a tackle? I forget.
It's push,
Okay, a push.
technically,
Yeah,
but
it acts very similarly to that, but because, you know, like, you know, if you're swinging like a boat oar around, it doesn't have any arc to it. It just kind of hits whatever's in front of you, like what other crosshair
ooh, that's
under.
kind of weak.
Yeah, that's kind of lame, right? And because of that, and because, you know, you can only attack one thing at a time, and your weapons break super, super easy, like even easier than in Dead Rising. Like I was sure. using boat oars that I got like maybe like 10 to 15 good whacks with.
What a lot of the reviews were saying, like 15 hits on a fully upgraded weapon.
Right. And it's kind of like, okay, well, if I fully upgrade this, am I going to want to spend my hits on it? And I spend less time thinking about how fun it is to hit zombies, which ostensibly is the reason why people would want to play a game with zombies in it. You know, just to have mindless fun hitting with it, you know, hitting them with various things.
But so this is like the opposite of Dead Rising 2 then.
Right. Because you have to economize. And in fact, it's the opposite of Dead Rising because, at the most in that first hour and a half of, you know, play, I maybe encountered like four zombies at a time.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Which the entire kind of appeal of, you know, oh my gosh, zombies are after me. They're slow and they're stupid. Okay. Yeah, they're slow and they're stupid. And, you know, they get you with numbers, and those numbers are not here.
Unless it's, you know, 28 days later, in which case it's just stupid.
Right, did you not like 28 days later, Winnesmith?
I don't like the whole fast zombies that I just, I don't know.
All right.
The zombies, they kind of have the mobility of general like regular human beings. They're not preternaturally fast like the 28 days later zombies were.
Gotcha. You know?
So yeah, that's a large part of my complaint. It misses the point in a lot of ways. Also, people seem to, you know, kind of associate whatever they want with this game. Like they say, oh, this is open world, or oh, this is Left 4 Dead, or oh, this is Dead Rising. Yes, the world is open, and yes, you know, it's very big, actually. I was kind of staggered by the size of the map. That's pretty cool. But people are also saying that this is like Fallout because you can scrounge for items and upgrade your weapons and do all that. The least fun thing about a Fallout game, from a purely visceral standpoint, although I am a kleptomaniac and I would walk into a house in Fallout and just pick up every single, you know, pot and pan and all that and take it back and sell it. But, you know, kind of the part that was, you know, the least gamey and the part that broke the pacing the most was when you would walk up and have to place your cursor over something and like, oh, I missed it. Oh, I missed it. Okay, there, I got it. Oh, there was like $4 in there. Cool. All right. You walk into these rooms, these situations, these wide areas with, you know, bodies and trash cans and luggage and everything laying all over the place. And it's like, okay, I'm going to take my break in this ostensibly co-op, you know, fast paced thing and kind of loot around while my buddies are waiting for me, I guess.
I really wish more games would do it. Speaking of that, like Borderlands. So I love the just kind of vacuum pickup.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, make it like Baldur's Gate, or make it like the Devil May Cry, even, you know?
Yeah.
Or Enslaved. Whatever you have. You know, what good can I say about it? I mean, it looks nice when the screen isn't tearing. Which is something that console games do to an inexcusable level. And it really bothers me.
Completely.
I don't know if other people are bothered by it as much as I am, but if I see a screen tear and I don't, you know, and you're on a console, so you can't set VSync to actually fix that problem. It really, really, really takes me out of the experience.
Hmm. Pro tip. There's a very, very easy way to fix that.
How? Play on PC. On PC. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I got you. So yeah, Dead Island. I'm probably going to play a little bit more of it, but beyond that, I think I might be done. So that's all I've been playing. I mean, I will have more Knights of the Old Republic for you next week, Ben. One thing that I will tell you, which is pretty cool. I placed my reservation for Skyward Sword today.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. I made sure. I you know, I thought about it for a long time. I want to get the special gold Wii Remote Plus. And the bundle that has the remote in it, like the limited edition thing, it's only $20 more than the game itself. So I would be getting a $20 Wii Remote Plus.
That's pretty sweet.
What do they cost normally?
Like $40.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, right? And you need the Motion Plus to play the game, so.
Oh, okay.
And David.
Well, I'll be honest, kind of pulling a Dennis, I've, you know, just started a new job. Well, Dennis and I guess Mirko as well just started a new job. So I haven't been playing a whole lot, although I did actually get started again playing World of Warcraft.
Okay. Wait a second. Last week we talked to Ben and I criticized him for like, oh, I just got a new job, so I'm going to play an open world time sink game like Fallout. You are offering the I just got a new job, so why don't I play an MMO? I gotta say, I'm not buying it, man. Continue.
I would like to defend myself and say that I've played that game before I started my job.
I know. Okay.
Well, I would say the two things. The reason I originally got it is you know, a lot of friends in Cincinnati that play it, so it's a real easy way to keep in touch with people.
Valid.
But also, I would say I like MMOs for that because I can get on and kill some kobolds and get some XP and feel like I accomplished something and then go do something constructive with the rest of my time.
Okay.
So, but this is the first time I've played it since the last expansion, so for everyone else, this is probably old news, but they've redone, I guess, their entire game world, which is sort of cool because they updated everything to show the results of all the quests you complete when you do a playthrough.
It's drastic.
So it's nice actually seeing some things change. Although the one thing I'm wondering is I can't quite tell if it's trying to do some like social commentary type thing, because the human lands, the overall like overarching plot line so far has been that through like the last two expansions, you know, the humans have been going to war with everyone and just, you know, focusing all their resources on that, and now like most of the second zone is just full of homeless people, stuff like that, because the economy's been wrecked.
Oh, Westfall? Like Westfall is
yeah,
all
so Red Ridge actually. So I can't quite tell if they're trying to go all social commentary on me or what.
Well, I mean, that's just interesting. I did you buy Cataclysm?
No, I did not.
Okay, because I bought Cataclysm and I played it, but I never really got too far out of the Worgen homeworld, so I wasn't able to see the changes to kind of the WoW 1.0 experience. But that was kind of one of the big box features for it was that players of WoW 1.0 who don't have access to the Cataclysm content will still have a completely new, you know, game to play.
Exactly, and one of the interesting things they've implemented is. Now several of the quests, I haven't quite figured out how they do it, but apparently change the way you perceive the game world. So like, you know, cities, you know, once you complete a quest, like getting raised. And so whenever you go back to them, they're all messed up. And I haven't figured out if it's just it changes the way you see it, or if it's like, you know, after the quest it changes things for a while and then goes back to normal or what. But it's a nice touch.
I think that it actually is like it changes the way that you see it. I think it's a very clever implementation of instancing.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a pretty effective way of you know, making the storylines a bit more believable, a bit more meaningful.
You know, this is what I say anytime an MMO comes up, but, you know, I like WoW. I really do. I think it's a very well-designed game. I've played it before. I got Cataclysm after it came out. I played that a little bit, but I have so much guilt associated with not playing them that, like, oh, I'm paying $15 a month for this. Well, do I feel like playing it? No, not really. Well, that makes me feel bad because I'm paying $15 a month to play it. I'm so flaky with my commitment to a game, you know, that I can't just do what I would normally do and just put that game down for several months and then come back to it later. So it's better for me not to even just be involved with it at the time because I can't predict when that's going to happen.
Sure, and I mean, that is, you know, previous to this, I played, like, right before December. So, I mean, that's pretty typical for me, too, is, you know, just you play, I play for a couple months and then cancel my subscription, so.
So what kind of, like, are you playing a character that you rolled before, or is this a new character?
Actually, kind of two things. One of the other features they've added I like is that you can now do dungeons with players that are on different servers. Yes. So I play with my martial arts instructor from back home, him and his wife, and all of my high-level characters are on a different server. So what I've basically been doing is I've rolled a human hunter and on their server I'm, you know, playing up through the levels, but then, you know, when they get on and are doing raiding, I just log on to one of my other characters and, you know, do a raid or two with them. So it's kind of some of both, and it's a nice feature.
Tell Kristen I said hello.
I will, definitely.
Well, that's cool. So you'll have to keep us availed to your exploits in that, in addition to other stuff that you might be playing. Was there anything else that you had been investing time in?
Been playing a little, some of, you know, been working my way still through Deus Ex. Not a huge fan of the new ads, but.
Oh, they put Star Wars ads in there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, kind of the previously mentioned bait and switch thing.
Wait, what happened?
Yeah, explain it to us.
The most recent patch added, ads to the loading screen of the game.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
That just sounds really intrusive to me. I don't...
It's not too bad, and you don't see the loading screen often because it is, you know, open world. But, oh, I don't know, the way it was done is kind of annoying.
Yeah, so these are ads for the new Blu-rays with the awful changes?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
What are the awful changes?
They're too numerous to list here. I think the most awful is that they monkeyed around with the original trilogy a little bit more.
Again?
Again, right. The scene where Darth Vader runs across the room and throws the Emperor down the shaft.
Yeah.
He screams, "No! No, 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 no!"
The Emperor does?
No, Darth Vader.
He screams no as he throws somebody down a shaft.
Like he says no, 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 no as he's looking at the Emperor torturing Luke. Then he screams no as he's running across, and then he picks him up and throws it down.
Is this to try and justify Darth Vader's screaming no like an idiot at the end of episode 3?
Well, it's throwing it along this, which, you know, there are lots of, you know, arguments to be made about why it's asinine. Like, you know, they did it the wrong way around. Like, they should have just taken the no out of episode 3 instead of, you know, letting that particular piece of hammy acting infect every other aspect of the character. But the actor who is in the suit, he does such a good job of kind of emoting the vulnerability and kind of conflictedness that Darth Vader is feeling at that time without words, without any, you know, anything, and just the voiceless aspect of that, just him, these subtle movements, and then getting up and doing it comes out of left field. That, and he takes the Emperor by surprise. That's why it's such a thing. You know, the Emperor just discounted, like, he would never turn on me, he would never turn on me, and then he's so busy having his fun torturing Luke, and then boom, here comes Darth Vader, throws him down out of nowhere. That doesn't play if Darth Vader is screaming no as he's running at you.
Yeah,
damn it.
The other thing I don't get is, apparently, he said no once, so therefore he must do it in every dramatic moment. Like, is that how things work?
I guess. I don't know. So, yeah. But these ads are being put in there. And, you know, in-game advertising, that's not a new thing. It was done as early back as, like, SWAT 4 that had in-game advertising. It even tracked how long you looked at the ads in order to sell it. Burnout Paradise famously has billboard ads in the world. But that is...
passive.
It's passive. It's part of the world, right? It's not like right in your face, like, oh, we're gonna sell ad space on this thing that we already sold to you and made our money off of.
Mm-hmm. See, and I feel like I wouldn't care so much if they tried to make it relevant. Like, for example, you know, if they, for example, did, like, you know, some ad for some product, but then, like, actually made the ad, what would this look like if it was an ad in the Deus Ex world? Uh-huh. That would be kind of cool, as opposed to, let's just take some ad our advertising department's already made and just paste it up there.
If it was like, okay, it's going to be a Coca-Cola ad. We will take that as read. It's going to be that. But we work with the graphic designers at Coca-Cola to market future Coke, right?
Right.
And say, oh, it plays nice with augments, et cetera, et cetera. So it's still, yeah.
I was going to say, one of the, like, in-game ads that's, you know, actually a fake ad, but that to me was really entertaining is, you know, it's set however long in the future, and you can, like, find an ad for, like, Final Fantasy 27 or something. like that. Like, yeah. I saw that. I'm like, ah, that's kind of witty. You know, yeah. Maybe that wouldn't exactly be an effective ad, but, you know, that sort of idea.
The word that I'm looking for is diegetic. Like, if it's a diegetic ad and it kind of, you know, really meshes in with the narrative and the established setting, and it doesn't just forcibly rip you out and kind of ruin your illusion, then it's fine.
Right.
Yeah. But that's not... That's not coherent. I'm thinking of Crazy Taxi, where all of the destinations were, you know, fast food joints. So the white girl would always go to Pizza Hut, and the black guy would always go to KFC. No joke.
Really?
I am not kidding you. Look it up. Look it up on YouTube. That even is a little bit too on the nose.
A little bit too racist?
A little bit, yeah. Regardless, like, why is everybody going to fast food?
What do you mean by on the nose when you say that, Cole?
when I say on the nose, I mean just, like, too obvious. Like, too...
These white girls love pizza.
Exactly. No, but so what I mean
what
by...
What about Alan Wake, the
batteries?
That too, is a little bit hinky. I don't know. It makes sense, but it's more of an anti-advertisement for Duracell because those batteries only lasted for, like, two goddamn minutes.
Cheap-ass batteries. I'm never buying those again.
But they kill monsters. That was episode number 129 of Stand Under the Don't Tree and Riddle Me This, a podcast about video games. Your homework for this week will be to tell your friends, Obvs, but also to like us on Facebook. If you have not become a fan of us on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/don'ttreeriddle, and there you will find a little like button, and you can participate in the conversation there. That is the best way to kind of interact with us. I think that and email too. That's don'ttreeriddle@duckfeed.tv. Other things you can do, you can go to duckfeed.tv and look up old episodes of the show. Some of the content is topical, but other stuff, you know, it gets better with age. You can find our information there. Subscribe to us on iTunes, review us on iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter. I am at Cole Ross, KOLEROSS. My name is spelled weird, I know that. And Dennis is at D Furia. Can you guys think of anything else that the listeners could do?
Cole, do you have any funny videos to watch this week that is as good as Alex Jones going Super Saiyan? Because I've watched that so many times over the past week.
Let me look at my favorites here. Okay, this one's a little bit long, but you should go to YouTube and look up something under the name of Paranoid Complains to City About Rogue Helicopter Pilot.
Oh!
Yes!
And there's a remix video, so it has to be pretty good.
that's your video homework. You can check that out. And just in general, keep on listening. So for Stand Under the Don't Tree and Riddle Me This, this has been Cole Ross. Dennis Furia has left the building, but he will be back. Who else is here?
This is Ben Merkel.
David Meyer Smith.
And just watch out for those helicopter pilots, man.
Three, two, one.
I'm here tonight to request John Walsh of the FBI's Most Wanted to make public and request a number one, America's number one public enemy. We have a rogue helicopter pilot on the loose inside this airspace. He's also on the loose inside this country. And I am after this report right here, which is a classified document from the Freedom of Information Act within the FAA. When I came down here to speak back in April about the bundling, I went home. I said something because I could back it up, because I went to the Smith Junior High meeting years ago and I reminded you of four things I said, which was no smoking, 30,000 seats, solar hot water panels on it, and put ice in the arena. And I told you why there's no ice in the arena. I made a statement, and the statement was the reason there's no ice in the arena is because somebody had their hand in the pot. He didn't want ice in that arena because he knew down the road, just like the NBA, eventually the NFL and the NHL were going to expand. And if he allowed ice to be put in that arena, that means sometime down the road he'd have a competing tenant, which would lessen his bargaining power at the city of Charlotte. I've been ready to explode like Mount St. Helens since the weekend of May 27th and 28th. And what happened to me was the evening of the 28th, I woke up in my house at late in the evening, early morning is a.m. and my house is shaking and it's shaking for over a minute to 2 minutes. It shook constantly, and it was the same white helicopter that I saw on Sunday afternoon that flew over my house when I walked from my part of the house to my garage.
The Boy Scouts in the audience, and they may be getting scared because
that's
of your behavior.
Fine, they have a right to be scared, because that's why I'm here tonight. I was scared. I was endangered, and I was threatened. My life was in danger because we have a helicopter pilot that flew 25 to 30 feet off my roof line between the magnolia tree and the property line for 1 to 2 minutes, and then he bailed out. And I followed him, and I tracked him down through the FAA because I made an official report. Sue Myrick knows about this. The FBI knows about this. John Edwards knows about this. This Criminal Intelligence Division of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department knows about this. I want this pilot. It's a matter of national security. Wherever you are, Mr. Helicopter pilot, come out of your hole. And you too, George Shin, because you were in that helicopter. You were in that helicopter, and you are nothing but a chameleon, lemon-headed, coward, terrorist pussy. And I'm after you, buddy. You're going to pay for it. Good night.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're nothing but a lemon-headed coward terrorist pussy.
I wonder how often he did this. Like, I wonder at the beginning. I love how they just are like, and such and such on the Homeland Security issue.
Well, it's just like it's Dale Gribble, right?